Welcome to the Goddesses of Social Work podcast, hosted by Renita Ray Davis, licensed clinical social worker, board-approved social work clinical supervisor, and facilitator of the Goddesses of Social Work supervision community. Join us as we travel through the social work journeys told by the Goddesses of Social Work community members, past and present, as they make their way toward clinical licensure.
Welcome to the Goddesses of Social Work podcast and our special series highlighting speakers and guests of the upcoming Affirming Our Presence Behavioral Health Conference, June 20th through the 23rd, 2024 in Plano, Texas. I'm your host, Renita Ray Davis, and I'm here today with Gabby Mitchell, LCSW, whose Affirming Our Presence conference topic is From Black Superwoman to Soft Girl. Gabby Mitchell is a licensed clinical social worker and the executive director of Gift of Gab Counseling, located in Chicago, Illinois. Gabby's extensive background involves working with children, adolescents, and families in both the child welfare and community mental health setting. Using empathy and culturally responsive interventions, Gabby is able to form meaningful connections with clients, often in times of crisis. Through Gift of Gab Counseling, Gabby is able to provide high-quality, culturally competent therapeutic services to children and adults who have been negatively impacted by violence, poverty, and intergenerational trauma. With a focus on individuals who have historically been denied access to therapeutic services, the goal of Gift of Gab Counseling is to decrease the stigma and other barriers that prevent those in need from seeking out and accessing treatment effectively, helping clients heal themselves. Understanding that the traditional therapeutic setting can often feel daunting and unwelcoming to many first-time clients, and in particular, people from historically marginalized backgrounds, Gabby's focus extends beyond one-on-one therapy to include mental health workshops in schools, churches, and other community hubs. Gabby also provides clinical supervision and consultation for other therapists in the field who want to improve their understanding of trauma-informed care. Outside her role at Gift of Gab Counseling, Gabby also plays a pivotal role as a core member of Chicago's CARE program, a pilot initiative offering an alternate response for 911 calls with a mental health component. Welcome to the podcast, Gabby.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me. I'm very excited to be here.
Yay. So glad you came. Gabby, I loved reading your bio, and my favorite part was using empathy and culturally responsive interventions. Can you expound on what you mean by and how you use in your practice culturally responsive interventions?
Yes. So when I say culturally responsive interventions, I'm sort of thinking of sort of that idea of meeting the client where they are and having interventions that work for the client given their cultural background, their religious background, their living situation, whatever the case may be, whatever some of those barriers may be to like the traditional therapy settings. How can we either A, turn those barriers into strengths, or how can we maneuver around those barriers in a way so that if that's the barrier to treatment, how can we get around it? So like teletherapy would be a great example, right? Like if you don't have transportation, spending 45 minutes to get to a 1 hour therapy session to get to 45 minutes back may not be the easiest thing for you, but if I can just bring it into your home, do you have an hour that you can go in your car and have this conversation? Yes. Okay. Then we can do therapy.
Awesome. Yeah, I love therapy. That's all I do is teletherapy.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And it has allowed more people to access mental health services. So yeah, I am excited because you didn't give us anything in your bio about your social work journey. Can you tell us about your social work journey? How did you find out about social work? And how did you get where you are now?
So I actually already knew about, my mom was a social worker, so I knew that social work was a thing, but because my mom was a social worker, I didn't really want to be one, because what I remember is this lady worked long hours, she had multiple jobs, and she was never home. I didn't want to do that. So How I ended up, well, okay. So on my, for context, on my flyer for the conference, there's like a motto, and my motto is failure leads to success, because I feel like it was a number of not being able to do's that led me to the doing that I'm doing currently. So I wanted to be a ballerina, and like how every little girl says they want to be a ballerina. No, like I was in high school taking dance classes half the day. Like I was like, I'm not worried about this whole college process because, like, I want to be a ballerina. My mom was like, absolutely not. Like, that is not, like, you need to go to college. So pick a college. So I begrudgingly decided that I was going to go to this tiny school in Iowa called Drake. One, because they had a track and field program and I was on the track team. And two, because they had a pharmacology program and I had taken a pharmacology class in high school. I was very interested in it. So I ended up going on this college tour of like all these different schools in Iowa, and Drake was cool, and there were a few other schools. And then the last day we went to this like school in Grinnell called in Iowa called Grinnell, which is in Grinnell, Iowa. So like if Drake was teeny, then Grinnell was like tiny. So like the school had maybe 1500 kids, the town had maybe another 2000 people, and like that was it. Very strange place to go coming from Chicago, but what I remember was like I had fun, and there were a lot of different types of people. And so I felt like no matter what I was into, like there would be somebody that would fit in. Like we were all kind of weird together, and it just sort of fit. So I came back and I was like, I'm gonna go to Grinnell. And my mom's like, what now? And I was like, well, you said I had to pick a college. So like I picked a college, went there. They didn't have a dance program. So I actually decided that maybe I could be a psychology major and like weasel my way into pharmacology school somehow. But when I went to register for classes, Psychology 101 was full. And so I did not get in to that class. But I ended up taking Intro to Sociology, which I thought was very cool, super interesting. I'd always been to English. I'd always read a lot. So it was a lot of reading, and I didn't mind that. It seemed to be a lot of common sense thinking, things of that nature. So I was like, all right, I think I'm going to be a sociology major. And so I took some psychology classes, English classes, different classes on the side, ended up majoring in sociology and psychology. By that time, I decided that I wanted to be an English teacher, right? So I like went and applied for one of those teaching programs, ended up teaching, applied for like this program that no longer exists, that paid like a very, like a less than livable salary, and like came with a side of food stamps, like literally. And so, I was like, well, they'll probably put me in Chicago. There are so many schools in Chicago that need teachers. No, they put me in the South Bronx in New York. So now I'm teaching in New York, thinking I'm living the dream. 22, realize I hate teaching. I hate failing students who I think are trying really hard, right? And still just can't make the state metrics. I hate going home on the weekends and reading 154 papers, most of which are written terribly, right? Because you're 14. And so, but I loved being with the kids. I loved being in the school. I was very good at forming relationships with like kids, even kids that were considered difficult. Like I never had a problem with those kids in my class. And another teacher was like, you should think about being a guidance counselor. Like you would make a good guidance counselor. So I was like, okay, I'm gonna apply to two schools back home because I need in-state tuition. And if I get in, I'll do it. If not, I won't. So I ended up getting into a program, an MSW program, and going in with the intent of being a teacher or a guidance counselor. And my first internship ended up being for a foster care center. And once I started doing trauma therapy and working with those kids and doing home visits and meeting those families, I was like, yeah, I want to do this. Like, I definitely want to do this. Went back that second year and was like, I think I'm going to do trauma. There was a fellowship that opened up, $10,000, which definitely sweetened my decision. And that was it. I was like, I'm a trauma therapist now. Here we are.
I love it. I love it. You really do have the gift of gab. That was That was really awesome. And I was like, oh, you did like I did when I was in college. I think I was a social, I, my last before social work was sociology, but before that it was English. Before that it was speech there. So I hear you and I love your motto. I do have a question. Why begrudgingly pick Drake? Why were you begrudgingly picking it?
Because I still wanted to be a ballerina. Like, I didn't want to go to college. And my mom was like, I did not work three jobs and put you through private school for you to just say, I don't want to go to college. That is not an option. So please pick a college.
Yeah, I hear you. I get it. So now you're a social worker, and I'm going to still go down your social work journey, but that answer gets me to my next question. Do you use dance in your practice with your clients now? Have you had an opportunity or have you thought about it?
I have not in my either of my current roles because at Gift of Gab, I'm also doing purely teletherapy. And then at my other role, I'm doing crisis work. But when I was doing home visits and working with kids who were in DCFS, I, of course, did so many movement-based things, so many dance parties, so many, with little kids, dance out your feelings, give me an angry dance, give me a happy dance, give me a sad dance. So, yeah, that movement piece. Has been very helpful, especially one, like I said, with children, but then two, doing trauma therapy. Trauma really has people, it leaves us disconnected from our bodies. And so being able to get into different movement-based things, I think, is really helpful for a lot of clients who feel that disconnection very strongly to get reconnected with their bodies or to see their bodies in a more positive light.
Absolutely. Oh, Gabby, I hope you get to use dance again because just the way you just even described how important it is to our clients who are experiencing trauma, I'm like, oh my goodness. Yes, gift of gab, but gotta use that gift dance too.
Coming soon. Yes.
Yes, I love it. Now you're a social worker and you were trying not to be what your baba was.
No.
What, how has your experience been different, you think, than what you think you saw? And or can you appreciate what your mama was doing now that you're doing it?
Oh, I definitely appreciate it. I almost like don't understand how she did it, especially like in the 90s as a single mom. As a Black woman, she also did not drive. So, like, when I think of doing like case visits, home visits on the Chicago transit system, with a child that you sometimes had to drop off, pick up, or do whatever with, I literally, like, I have so much respect for her. Like, I don't know how she even managed to do that. But I think a part of it, I think what's different about our journey is one, I do not have kids. I have two fur babies, but you can leave them at home. So that's a little bit different. And then two, she was a program manager and a case manager. I've been a therapist the whole time. So I've actually never been on paper a case manager, although, of course, we all take on that role from time to time. And I think a lot, not to say that doing therapy isn't draining, but I think case management can almost be even more draining, and typically the pay is less as well. So I think that's like the main difference. And I was the reason that I've been a therapist, I was very intentional about like I do not want to be a case manager. I'm fine doing case work for my clients because like I believe that Maslow's hierarchy is real, and like if you don't have food, clothing, shelter, we're not going to talk about your feelings in any real and meaningful way. But like, I've never wanted that to be my primary role. And I do think that's in part from seeing my mom have that job.
I love the way you spoke about your mom. And one of the things, and I didn't do it with you, Gabby, is I always talk about the goddesses that came before us. And your mom is one of the social work goddesses that came before us. And so I just, are we okay with saying her name and just giving her a shout out?
Oh, yeah. Shout out to my mom, Danette Mitchell. She will be listening, I'm sure.
Thank you for the work you did. Thank you for the work you did, Ms. Mitchell. I love that. So I am curious, Gabby. So because your mom was a social worker, it sounds like once you realize, and I get it with the papers. Look, I taught in graduate school and we had like 30 whatever, and just reading 30, I could imagine reading 100 and some odd papers every weekend. But so I guess I'm curious, how did you know that did you also apply for a counseling program? Because you went into the MSW program thinking you're going to become a guidance counselor. I'm like, wait, you didn't go for counseling? I guess I wanted to hear, how did you decide between the counseling program and the MSW program?
I really wish that I had put more thought into it, but I was like, I know I cannot. I knew that I was not the teacher that these kids needed. Like, honestly, like they were not learning English. But I do think I was therapeutic. So I applied to two schools, and one was an MSW program and one was a counseling program. And of the two schools, it was University of Illinois Chicago, UIC. That was just the one that I wanted to go to more. And so the way it was, you did the generals the first year, and then the second year you did your program specifics. But after that first year internship, I was like, I really like this. And I didn't understand at the time like how difficult it would be to then be a counselor without doing the guidance. We have a specific school-based program. But I still feel like I made the right decision at the end of the day, because I think that the foster care and the child welfare system, especially here, it's not a population that a lot of people want to work with. It's very difficult, and there are a lot of systemic barriers, a lot of paperwork, very low reimbursement rates. It's difficult for no reason almost. And so I feel like there was a need there. And then I also just really resonated with those clients. Like, I've known I've always wanted to work with kids. And so like I just felt like this was like I needed to be in that population.
I absolutely think you made the right decision. I do. I love that you're in social work, and what an honor and a tribute to your mom as well. I am curious, Gabby, I often ask folks, because I'm interested in people's not only their social work journey, but also their clinical license journey, just because I want to give brown and black women, like, there's a bunch of us out here doing, even though the numbers are being, thrown out there that so many of us aren't passing. A lot of us have passed and are doing well. So I'm curious, do you mind sharing what your clinical social work journey has been like?
Oh, yes. So, after I graduated, I ended up working at a foster care agency. And I was just pretty comfortable just being there doing the work that I was doing. But after I'd been there for like maybe 2, 2.5 years, there's a very high attrition rate. So like it got to like the 3 year mark. I'm still in my role, no salary bump, but like I'm one of the most senior employees. And after meeting with upper management, they were actually very supportive. They were like, we think you should get your clinical license. We think you should take the exam so that you can, find a position, because we don't have anything open right now. So I actually think I got very lucky in that my workspace was super supportive of me taking that next step. And then it just so happened that someone who was a case management supervisor had just taken the exam and passed. And she had used a specific program, the Therapist Development Center program. So they had sent me that information, and I believe my job at the time did provide some professional development funds. I don't know if they covered the whole thing, but they did like offer that plus like a couple of days off to actually study for the exam. So they were very helpful. So for backstory, when I first decided to take the exam, I use like a practice app or something, like an app that I got on my phone, and I took a practice exam and I got a 40%. And I was like, well, this is not gonna happen. Like, this is not a good idea. Like, I don't think I should do that. And then after I explained that, they were like, okay, like let's try this specific program and see if it helped. And it did. I passed the first round.
Congratulations. And that's awesome. I know some of those testing apps can make it feel like you're not going to pass and make it scarier to go forward with it. And so, yeah, congratulations. I know your mama must be super proud of you.
Yeah, no, I think she's a pretty pretty happy at this point,
Yeah,
pretty proud, I would say. I hope we'll find out.
I'm sure she is. How did you decide to move into private practice? Because that's a big leap.
It is a big leap. I was so it kind of like happened during like the COVID situation. So a little before COVID. So in 2019, I was transitioning jobs from that first job to a second job, and I lost all my clients. Like, and with kids, especially kids in the system, they get very attached. So I had a lot of parents who were asking, like, is there any way we can stay with you? Things like that nature. And I had no idea about like the option to do private practice, didn't know anybody who was doing it. So like I didn't know that was an option. So what ended up happening was I had all these parents and teenagers just calling me for free, right? Like I'm just answering the phone because I'm like, oh, if a 16-year-old calls you, they must need help, right? So like I wanted to like be able to still be that bridge, especially because like in the back of my head, I'm like, Black people seeking therapy want to keep that open, right? Want to keep that door open, want to make sure they have this positive experience. And then someone was like, well, you can't just work for free forever. Like you need to figure out how to like monetize this. And so that's sort of what led me down the steps of going the private practice route. And I by no means have it perfect and have like a really long way to go, but it is sort of like a need ba I think it has like sort of like a need-based origin where people were asking me for this service. And even though I didn't want to do it, it was almost like a calling or like a pet. You know what I mean? It's like when somebody tells you, it's like you can't stop the message. If God's trying to send you a message, it comes this way and then it comes this way and then it comes this way. So it's like, okay, well, I have to listen.
I love it. Yes. Especially after two or three messages.
Yeah.
Like, I got, okay, God, I get it.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I'm going to transition. Thank you so much for sharing your journey and great luck to you. You're going to do great. You're going to do absolutely great. But I do want to go ahead and transition into why you're here, which is you are one of the speakers for the Affirming Our Presence Behavioral Health Conference. And so one of the questions we had was, why did you decide this year to submit a speaker proposal?
Well, I wanted, so I learned about the conference last year. It was too late for me to go. So I had added them and was like on the mailing list waiting to see like when it opened up this year. So then when it opened up this year and they said they were looking for presenters, at first I didn't think of doing it because I was like what is there that I could present on that like no one is talking about or that no one knows, right? And like then I was like, that's that imposter syndrome setting in. Like you said that you wanted to start doing speaking engagements. This is an opportunity, like literally dropped into your email inbox. Like, what's the worst that could happen? Worst that could happen is you have this proposal, it's not accepted, it's a draft, you try again next year. So I submitted the proposal and I ended up getting accepted. And the reason that I picked that this topic specifically is because I felt like it was something that was personal to me and something that I had been working on as well as a professional, especially post-COVID. So I was like, well, if I'm talking to a group of my peers, this is probably something that's not, it's not a research article, it's not client-based, but it's something that like we probably all can resonate with a little bit.
Oh, definitely. Absolutely. We're gonna get into a brief description of it in just a second. But you know, with the conference itself, you said you wanted to go last year, and this year not only are you gonna get to attend, but you're speaking. Why do you feel spaces like this are important?
Because there is a difference for us, right? Like it does feel different to work in this space. It is different to work and be in this space. And I think our presence needs to be affirmed. I remember when I decided to leave one of my previous jobs, we had like a staff meeting where people were, because my direct boss knew. And so she was explaining to the rest of the staff that I would be leaving. And I remember like someone saying, but she's our only Black therapist. And I remember thinking, how is that my fault? Like that you guys haven't looked for another one. And then it just became the discussion. They're like, oh, well, we try and we don't know where to find them. I'm like, well, where are you looking? Like, I'm not the only one. Like, I can't be the only unicorn. So like, I'm very excited to be in a space where it's like, no, there are many of us. We do exist. We are here. And this is what it feels like, by the way, to be here.
Absolutely. And this is what it looks like. Absolutely. And I love that you said, why is that my fault?
Yeah.
Like, why is that my fault? Absolutely. I love that comeback. That was great. So tell us about your topic, Gabby, from Black Superwoman to Soft Girl.
Yes. So my presentation is all about exploring and breaking down this idea of the Black Superwoman, the strong Black woman, whatever you know it to be, and helping us move from that superwoman, strong woman to our soft girl era because, like, it's our time and we deserve it, right? And this came in part from like just thinking about COVID and its impact on people in the healthcare profession, specifically just how we worked. Like, everyone talks about how COVID was great and you had all these days off and you got this money and it was so fun. And I was like, I literally worked more than I ever worked. I had no cancellations. Do you know what client cancels in the middle of a global pandemic? None of them. None of them, because they have nowhere to go and nothing to do. So you guys were at home, but like therapists, psychiatrists, nurses, doctors, we were at work every day. So one, we didn't experience that, but then the other piece is just, workspaces. With between COVID and what everyone calls the racial reckoning, which I really don't enjoy that term, but the idea of like all of the social justice things that were going on, like for a lot of us, workplaces were volatile spaces, right? They were anxiety producing spaces, right? They were uncomfortable spaces. And so we went to work anyway and took care of our patients and took care of our families and took care of our parents, whatever the case may be, and how many of us really stopped and took the time for ourselves, and how many of us still have not done that, even now that things have calmed down a little bit. And I especially thought this was important to talk about in this group because a lot of us are clinicians, a lot of us are private practice therapists. So we're in the space where, like, a lot of us, we might have the funds to take care of ourselves a little better, right? Like, we might have the time and the space to create space for ourselves and the luxury for ourselves. But how many of us are just grinding? How many of us are like, well, every hour is 120, is 150, is 200. So do I really need that vacation? Because that's 8 slots. Do I really need those extra hours? Because that's 2 slots. And so how many of us are still taking on all those burdens because it's all we know, right? And continuing to go, and then at what cost?
Yeah, absolutely. And, especially those of us in private practice, when we had PTO, we weren't doing a good job of taking days off, but at least we weren't losing money. And so it does make it a little bit more difficult to say, hey, I need to take those time, that day off. But Gabby, why is it now the soft girl era, as you called it?
Well, so I think to me, at least, this is just my perspective, is like for a lot of us, this is the first time we've had the space. And even if we have the space, a lot of us still don't feel like we have permission. Because as Black women, you're supposed to be strong, right? You're supposed to take on all these things. Your parents, your grandparents, your great, 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 great grand, whatever. Did all this with did more with less, and Black women can do more with less. And so why can't we? But I think one, what we're seeing now is that the strong Black woman, they had to exist, right? Like, there was not always a space for us to be weak. If you think about the history of slavery and pitting us against the cult of domesticity, right? Like, nice cutesy things were for white women, right? And so we did not legally have permission to be soft, right? And that continued for such a long time, and it became a mindset, and it became for a lot of people, including myself, right, a personality trait, and not a bad one, right? Like, there are a lot of things you could be called as a Black woman that's worse than strong, right? So like that is I think a part of why it is so ingrained in most of us. And what we know is strong Black women are dying, right? Like Black is cracking on the inside, even if not on the outside. You know, we have high diabetes, we have high blood pressure, obesity, all of these things that being strong has done to us over time. And now that we have the permission socially, right? Because I think there is this shift in perspectives, right? How do we give ourselves permission internally?
And sometimes we just need somebody to give us permission. And it sounds like that's what you're going to be doing for us during the conference in June. I'm excited. Gabby, we would love for you to be able to promote your own attributes, businesses, companies, and successes. What you got going on, girl?
Okay, well, yeah, as I talked about, so I am the executive director of Gift of Gab Counseling. It is a private practice based in Chicago, Illinois. So I do a lot of individual therapy, for adults and for kids. And I also do a lot of different workshops and things. Usually, so like, for example, schools, I do a lot of schools. We do a lot of in the summer community activations and workshops and partnering with different organizations who are already doing the work in the city, just providing that added like clinical piece, because there are so many organizations who are trying to do the work and take care of people's mental health who just like maybe don't have the staff or the capacity or the language. So I try to really act as a supplement or in tandem with them. And then one thing that I'm hoping on, it's interesting that you said you hope I get to move, continue using movement. One thing I am working on is setting up some workshops here in Chicago this summer, that are more movement-based. So talking about that connection between trauma in the body, in connection with someone who's a licensed Pilates instructor. So getting them on board to help us, to help me provide some actual tangible stretches and coping skills and things you can do in addition to just saying like, hey, your hips hold stress, right?
That love for dance and that gift for dance didn't go anywhere. And I'm loving seeing social workers combine their passion and love and just how really good we are at the practice with what they personally love and tying all that in to help our clients in a more expansive way. So I'm really super excited that you're doing that this summer. I hope both kids and adults get to benefit from that. Good. Awesome. That's really great to hear. Gabby, what is one belief about social work that you started on this journey with that you feel has changed the most?
I think I really didn't understand how vast of a term it is. So, like, because my understanding of social work came from like my mom and what they did at her job, I thought like, okay, that's what social work is. And as my understanding of what my job entails has expanded. Like, there's just so much that like I wish basic social work, intro to social work, maybe sociology. I feel like these are almost like social emotional skills that like should just be ingrained into like our school system and our curriculum, because like social work and social justice are about being better people, right? Like just being good people. And so I think that like if some of these lessons and values were more just ingrained into our everyday way of thinking, like how much less there would be for like our little army of social workers to try to tackle on our own. And I think that is starting to change. Like I definitely know that here in Chicago, social emotional learning is something that's talked about in schools a little bit, and they're doing research around how to integrate that. But like older people especially, like I feel like as adults, like sometimes you get very stuck in your mindsets. And I think some of these core components of social work could really help us just be better people, be better to ourselves, be better to one another, which I think would have like huge mental health benefits just all the way around.
Absolutely. And one of your co-speakers is talking about SELs for her presentation as well. So I agree the topic and the importance is definitely getting out there. And I want to even just say back to how you didn't realize how vast the field of social work is. I love that some of my colleagues who work in the collegiate field of social work are even using this podcast. One of the reasons I want to be like, how did you get into social work and what are you doing with it? So that people who may not know what social work is are listening to 50, 60 different, beautiful goddesses talk about literally the vastness of social work. And so hopefully we're getting the word out.
Yes. I'm just saying, I think this is great. I actually loved listening to the other ones as well. So
it was awesome. Exciting. I'm so glad you listened. That is great. Oh, so Gabby, sorry. That was so easy to slip into.
Oh, no, Gabby's. Many nicknames.
I love it. Gift of Gab. And so that's where I went with it. But we are getting to our final couple of questions. It's been said, you really do. I know I said it in the beginning, but you really do have the gift of gab. And I hope you continue to use it on a larger scale. But what are you looking forward to the most from attending the conference? And what do you hope attendees will gain from attending their session or conference or the conference in general?
I'm most excited to be in a room with a bunch of people who do this work that look like me. I've never had that experience before. And so I think that's what I'm most excited for. And then the other piece is learning from people all who are doing social work all across the country, I think is very interesting, because living in the Midwest, but being in America, I think sometimes you have a very narrow understanding of how America works. And like, it doesn't work the way that it works here in most places. So hearing what other people have done, their successes and challenges and what else is out there, that's, I think, what I'm most excited for. Because even though I've been doing this work for a while, I realize in the grand scheme of things, I'm like a baby social worker still. So I feel like there's so much that I'm going to be able to get from this. And I hope that everybody is able to get something from this, no matter where they are in their journey.
Absolutely. I've been doing this for 24 years and I still say I'm a baby social worker because there's so much that I still want to do. Yeah. Like this podcast just came out of nowhere and social work keeps evolving. And so even though you feel like you've done one thing, you go to another 5 years and there's something that opened up that wasn't possible 5 years ago. So yeah, I love the beginner's mindset of social work. Stay a baby in social work and you're going to have a really good time. I love that. And do you have any final words of wisdom or advice you would like to leave our audience with today?
I would encourage everyone to think about the value in their story, no matter how positive or negative it is. Because I think about if I had let imposter syndrome win that day and not done this, not sent this email, I wouldn't have the opportunity to be a part of this podcast or this conference or connect with all of the other women who are participating in this in some way. And so even though what I plan on talking about is probably small and there's so many other people at the conference who also will have this knowledge base, I think that there is value in me being able to share that and talk about it, and it might help somebody. And I think no matter how good or bad your story is or how mundane it is, there's nobody quite like you. And so there's something you're going to be able to like give, even if it's the worst story in the world, then you have the best story to tell about what not to do, right? Like, so like there's value in sharing your story and there's healing in that as well.
Gabrielle, that was beautiful. I almost came to tears. That was absolutely beautiful. And can I like to just repeat how I heard that, if that's okay. But before I do that, I want to say your clients are so blessed to have you. And I also want to say that you absolutely might save somebody's life by doing your conference topic. It is not small in the least. It is so important for Black social workers or Black helping professionals, because I know Jasmine has gotten the NBCC and other professional organizations to approve of the topics. But you actually might be the one who saves that person's life, because they're like, you know what? I'm gonna put some boundaries up. I'm gonna slow it down. And then we prevent a heart attack or stroke. And so I'm glad you're showing up. I'm absolutely glad that you are showing up and doing your presentation topic. You encouraged me tonight, so thank you for that. Thank you.
Thank you. I appreciate that. I really do. Thank you.
Yeah. All right, Gabrielle, thank you so much for coming on the Goddesses of Social Work podcast. This has been such a joy. I'm smiling from ear to ear. You have been such an amazing social worker to interview, and thank you for sharing your story. It was important.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Thank you for listening to today's episode of the Goddesses of Social Work podcast. We are glad you were here. If you like this episode, please come back to hear more stories of the journeys through social work, and please leave us a review on Apple or Spotify. See you next time here on the Goddesses of Social Work podcast.